And welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, and for months I've been saying, sitting in for the rest of the band, well, the band is here. Florence Schwein is our guest today. Rather than to be the host, you are now our guest. Welcome, Florence.
Thank you so much. I feel like I'm in the hot seat.
No, I just think that maybe our listeners would love to know what's going on with Florence Schwein, why you haven't been here since November. There are, you know, things happen, life does happen and whatnot, but I wanted to catch everybody up to speed as to Florence Schwein, the person.
Oh, Florence Schwein, the person, has arrived at another stage in life, actually. We are moving to Asheville, North Carolina, and to a retirement community. However, I don't really feel retired.
You've had a rich life here in El Paso, and from what I'm gathering from having conversations with you, you hadn't really intended to spend all this much time here in El Paso, some 25 years.
Oh, well, El Paso is home. It's my town. It's my mountain. It's my sky, which I share with everybody else.
Oh, thank you very much.
I have lived in El Paso longer than I've ever lived any place in my whole life. And in fact, the house that I live in now, I've lived in longer than any place in my whole life.
Oh, my gosh. You've done a lot of moving around, too. You really have.
Oh, yeah. 14 times. Oh, since I've been married. I moved before then, too. But yeah. 14 times in 53 years. But we came here in 1988 because my husband was transferred here with the federal government. And it became home, really home.
You know, it's a fascinating story that I think our listeners can really embrace, because most of our listeners who are transplants here feel the same way. I didn't intend to stay here in El Paso for blah, 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 but something happened and all of a sudden I've been here for X amount of years. And let's face it, El Paso really is kind of a comfy place to be.
Comfy, it's more than comfy. It's vibrant. I know there are many people who say there's nothing to do. I haven't been bored at all. Mm-hmm. There are lots of things to do. The city offers so much, and it's offering even more than when I first came here.
I think so. And, you know, part of the fabric that is El Paso started, I think, when you were the director of the museum across the street over the Centennial Museum. I think what happened there, honestly, you started a trend where everybody started looking around for things to do rather than to say what you just echoed from other people. There's nothing to do in El Paso. Well, really?
Really? You can go back to prehistoric time periods and see things.
Exactly.
And just follow it all the way through. Conquistadors and, you know. And even if you're not a lover of history, it kind of rubs off. And it's multicultural, which is a real delight. You get acquainted with things that you didn't know about before. Mm-hmm. And although I had worked at the Smithsonian many years ago, now that we're talking many years ago.
Okay.
And I worked on a big exhibit called Celebrations at the Renwick Gallery, which is the arts and crafts museum of the Smithsonian. And it's next door to Blair House, where the president's visitors stay, and across the street from the White House. And it was a huge, huge impact on me because we looked at the way different peoples celebrated extraordinarily wonderful events in their lives, birth and puberty, and then, of course, the event of death. And it was many cultures that we studied and we had in that exhibit. And I was the outreach director. So before I came here, I already had a real interest in multicultural areas. So El Paso fit the bill perfectly.
Yeah, cool. One of the things, we had a conversation just before the Labor Day holiday 2013, because we'll probably air this again, too.
Well, that's what primetime's all about, isn't it?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I remember talking to you or listening to you tell me about was curating. I had asked you if you had a favorite exhibit to curate, and instead there was a different answer.
Oh, there were so many.
Yeah.
and actually, the Centennial Museum has a curator, Scott Cutler. So as the director, I got to oversee that and had many, many experiences. There were so many that it's hard to pin down to favorites, and I put a plural on that because there were so many. But there was a gentleman in town who had a collection of Native American artifacts. And he called the university one day and said, I want to give my collection to the Centennial Museum. So Scott and I went out and visited with him, and it really increased the depth of the collection at the museum. But just sitting at Jerry Fitzgerald's feet and listening to the stories about each piece that was part of his collection was just an amazing experience. And that's what museums are about. They're about objects and the stories that go with them. And it's up to the museum people to protect those collections and to educate about them. And that's why it's so important to have museums, basically, I think. And probably the thing that brought me into the whole idea of working in museums.
When you look at a radio program like El Paso Primetime, where we try to illuminate knowledge, mm-hmm. we try to educate our audience on things like museums, the importance of museums, do you find that we're in an uphill battle, or do you think that we're on target in being able to talk about this and having that one-on-one relationship with the listener who will then go to the museum and experience it?
Actually, I think National Public Radio is one of the best assets we have in our country, because what it does is the very thing we're talking about. It educates people. And so, as you know, I've been closely associated with KTEP for many years. And I've always felt that that was all those endeavors were worthwhile.
There's a story that comes with your series, Desert Diaries.
The story? Yeah. Which story?
how it came to be.
Oh, how it came to be.
And how you came to be the voice of Desert Diaries.
Oh, dear. Well, we had already been doing Sunscape as being associated with the museum, and that was with Wynn Anderson and John White. At the time, John was employed in El Paso at the time, and Wynn was the botanical curator at the museum. And so we had a little bit of a history doing Sunscape, which was fun. And that came about because of the garden, the Chihuahuan Desert Gardens at the museum. And so I got this idea that we could do something like Desert Diaries and put it into a grant proposal. So I came over and I talked with Pat Petrosky, the director here at KTEP, and he agreed that it was a good idea. So we write it up, and we didn't get the proposal funded. There were a lot of other things in it, and it was not funded for us. But Pat called and said, do you think we could do that anyway? And I didn't pause very long. And I said, I think so. But I had in mind a man who had a velvet voice and was already on KTEP with his own show. And that's what I suggested. And it was Pat who said, oh, no, you're the voice of the museum, so you need to be the voice of Desert Diary. Well, way back when I was working at the Smithsonian, I did a little bit of public relations work. And so I had a little bit of a background, but not like the training I got at KTEP. And so Desert Diaries was born, and Several people helped with writing some of the material. I wrote some of the material, but the producer here was Norma Martinez. And she probably taught me everything I know about radio. Mm-hmm. And then I came along to primetime.
Yep. And that was kind of an easy transition, so to speak.
And you continued with that, but primetime kind of changed when mm-hmm. I started working with it.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was one of our guests who suggested at the moment that mm-hmm. we change the name from what used to be known as Senior Junction mm-hmm. to what it is now, El Paso Primetime.
Right. It was almost – it was when I was interviewing her, and she did it. And
mm-hmm. Right in the middle of the thing, she just said – she stopped and said, oh, no, wait. I don't want to be on. I don't want to be on Senior Junction, and that's okay.
Prime time seems to work.
I think so.
You know, it's a third age that a lot of us like to refer to as being seniors.
Mm-hmm.
That busy age where you can take a deep breath and say, "Oh, I can do some of the things I always wanted to do now," and I recognize that.
Well, you just came back from a cruise, for instance. That's something that third agers can really embrace, the idea and notion to be able to go do something like that.
Oh, yeah. We had done a little bit of cruising before, and we have a group of, it turned out to be 18 friends, and Dick and me and 16 others, and we had traveled with most of them to the Greek islands a couple years ago. And so at that time, even on our way home, there was some conversation about, well, I've always wanted to go to Russia. And so 2 years later, we as a group took a cruise called the Baltic Odyssey. And we went to Germany and Russia and Estonia and Poland. But we spent 3 days in St. Petersburg. And we had, since I used to teach the museum studies class here at the university, I think I'm pretty particular about what tour guides do with people and things like that. We had one of the best tour guides for 3 days in Russia that I have ever met in my whole life. And for instance, at Peterhof, which is the summer home of Peter the Great and some of the other royal families, there is a promenade from the balcony of the castle all the way down to the sea, and there are 200 fountains, and they are gravity fed, but every day that the grounds are open, they go off at 11 o'clock, and this wonderful lady had us out there on the balcony right in time to see it. You know, at the Hermitage, we went in before it opened, and we were taken directly to the Da Vinci pieces. So you can imagine, I was all eyes and floating. Mm-hmm. But the last day, some of the group wanted to not go to another cathedral. Instead, they wanted to go to a grocery store and buy vodka.
Oh. So,
so she took us to a supermarket, which in St. Petersburg would have reminded us of a supermarket. Well, I actually did, of a supermarket of about the 1970s.
Okay.
But the vodka aisle took up one whole length of the store. I bought chocolates. So,
oh,
anyway, and we enjoyed them actually just a few days ago.
Oh, nice. For those of you just barely tuning in, this is El Paso Primetime, and the voice that you've been hearing is Florence Schwein, but she's not our host today. She's our guest, and I'm really happy that you're here with us.
Thank you. It's nice to be able to tell the listeners out there how much I have appreciated over the years when you've walked up to me and said, oh, I heard Desert Diaries or I heard Primetime. It's that kind of response from the listeners that really make the host and the people that work at KTEP feel appreciated. And I just want all the listeners out there to know how much I've appreciated them over the years. I mean, it's been several years.
Yeah.
I think way back to like 2001 or something.
That somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. Who's counting?
And I'm going to quit counting all these years. And, you know, Primetime just wouldn't have been what it is without all the people who allowed me to interview them.
Mm-hmm.
What great people I had.
You've got a plethora of talent that you tapped into, that you brought into the studio to talk about so many different topics, so many things that made the Third Age as vibrant as it's supposed to be.
Oh, the Third Age is fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, and I got to learn so much. You know, when you're doing things and you're learning, that makes it extraordinarily special because there's a certain amount of vitality that comes from that and even creativity. So thank you all. You did it.
Well, thank you, Florence. And there's another set of students who would say thank you as well, and that's over at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, Ollie.
Oh, Ollie.
Yeah.
You know, in life, it's almost the last thing you do that you think is the most exciting. And after retiring from the museum, I started teaching in Ollie and I taught art history. And that was one of my majors in graduate school. And so it was like visiting an old friend every week when I would, you know, prepare my lectures and get the slides ready, not slides anymore, but get the material ready for the visual material. And so it was like revisiting things I had studied in college, and I loved it. But then I ended up teaching drawing this last year. Well, my first degree is in studio art. And guess what? I love that even more. So my last classes that I taught were a week before we went on that wonderful trip. It's a very special class. The people still get together. And mm-hmm. I just can't imagine. I was amazed. I had people who... a person who had a master's in art education in the class and people who had been artists for a long time. And I had brand new people who just thought they might like to learn to draw. And I was amazed. I'm still amazed. They keep in touch with me by email and sometimes send me one of their drawings. And they're incredible. I don't know what happened here. But I think it was that I told them they could do it,
mm-hmm.
and gave them permission to do it. And they gave them a little instruction, and they're off and running. So I hope that they'll continue to send me things in my new place because I certainly miss them.
Is that the impetus for learning? It's just giving them the permission to learn, you think?
I don't know. You know, drawing is very different because it's something that we always magically think that you have to be born with a talent. And it's not that at all. It's skill. It's learning a skill, teaching people to see. But maybe that could apply to most anything. I've been in different kinds of museums, certainly the arts and crafts and the art art museum at the Smithsonian. Then I was the founding director of the Cleveland, Ohio Police Museum. My husband was transferred there, and they wanted a museum, so I had that experience. And then I came to El Paso, and the Centennial is a natural and cultural history museum. Plus, we started the garden. There were just so many things to learn on the way that I am just a believer is, first you need to learn the vocabulary of the subject, and then you can delve as deep as you want to.
It makes sense to me.
So it's fun. And then I come over to KTEP, and I get to interview people in all sorts of different walks of life. What can be more fun than that?
And you've stretched the rainbow, if you will, of all of the topics here, because your curiosity of whatever the topic was, you and I would sit down and say, well, what if I brought in – sure, go ahead, because it's all part of the fabric of the life of the Third Age.
Right. And maybe it is because – I'm an older person, a third age person, that I'm allowed to be curious. It's okay for me to be curious. I no longer have to pretend I know anything in the world. Mm-hmm. I can just say, tell me about it. Maybe that's it. I don't know. But I do know that it adds a lot of joy to everyday living.
I think that's something maybe, and this is just my opinion, that youth misses out on. I don't think their curiosity comes from natural curiosity. I think it's curiosity fed by the desire to get a degree or desire to earn X amount of dollars. It's not, I want to learn that just because I want to learn that. I don't see that much in this generation. Maybe I'm just sheltered.
Well, I don't know. Dennis, I've taught from second grade through seniors now, taught second grade art. And junior high art, and then I got my master's in museum studies and art history. And it seems like we have that curiosity when we're young, when we're in grammar school. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's changed, even though many years have passed. But maybe as we get older, we regain some of that. There's a period in our lives where we really have to concentrate on livelihood. But sometimes we regain some of that through our children or through being around younger people. But then when those tasks are taken care of and we begin to relax a little bit more, we can go back to looking at what really interests us or what turns us on for whatever you might call it. The other thing that has really changed, I think, is the fact that we can communicate. The internet has changed our lives in so many ways. When I was a child, we had to go from my village about 70 miles south of Chicago to a decent museum, and of course they have wonderful museums. But now you can get on the internet, and for instance, I did a lot of studying about the Hermitage before we went just by getting on the internet. It's a keystroke. Mm-hmm. Where it used to be a 70-mile ride.
Yeah, I could see that. So the joy of you going to St. Petersburg and actually seeing this face-to-face, that's got to be a thrill.
Well, and it probably relates to back to my childhood again.
Mm-hmm.
My very best girlfriend, Joy, his grandmother was probably – she was from Russia, but I think now she must have been from the Ukraine. And it was 2.5 blocks from my house to the school, the grade school. And Joy would walk to my house, and then we'd walk to school together. And on the way home, her grandmother would always be outside sweeping her porch. And she would invite us in for cookies and coffee. Cookies and milk. She would have coffee. And she never spoke English to me. But her house was filled with all of these wonderful things that I had never seen before. And, of course, Joy had to practice Russian when she for those, you know, I don't know, 20 minutes or so that we would spend almost every day that she was out sweeping the porch. We never knocked on the door if she wasn't out sweeping the porch. That right. porch was the cleanest porch in town, I'm sure. But one little thing that she had several little lacquer boxes that are made in many of the villages in Russia. And they have, a lot of them have religious paintings on them. And they're tiny. I'm talking about little boxes that are maybe 2 to 3 inches. Mm-hmm. So she would take them out of her cabinet and set them on the table, and we could look at them. And I couldn't believe that anybody could paint anything so tiny. Guess what? A few years ago, I came across a couple of books that were about these lacquer boxes. So I've had those books that were written by an American immigrant from Russia about the villages where these little boxes were made. On the trip, I bought the little box is just the right size to put your rings in when you're doing dishes or something like that. It's very tiny.
Oh, nice.
And they're pretty expensive. I brought that little box home. I immediately went to my books, and the village in which the box was made is one of the villages that's in the book.
Oh, nice.
Isn't that?
Oh,
I know.
How cool.
It's neat.
Yeah, it is.
And that's the only thing I really bought. Oh, no, I bought a shawl. In Estonia, I bought a shawl that I thought would be nice on winter days in Asheville.
Asheville has a public radio station, and
I'm sure it does.
Yeah, it should.
I don't know.
I believe it does. We used to do a lot of trading with programs. Whenever their computers would die, we would send them stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe they do. Nevertheless, once you get settled into Asheville, North Carolina, maybe you should approach the operations director there and see if you can get a show like this on.
Oh, I think I'm going to have plenty to do to get a house situated.
Well, maybe so. But, I mean, after you get everything situated, everything done, think of all the stories that you could tell in Asheville.
About El Paso.
Absolutely. But about people in Asheville who haven't had a chance to tell their story.
Oh, I don't know. It's a thought, Dennis. But one of the first things I'm going to have to do is do some furniture shopping.
Yeah.
Because furniture that fits in this house doesn't fit in a cottage. But it's a really nice cottage. It has a woods behind it, which is going to be fun.
Oh, it'll be nice.
Granddaughters are there.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be fun, especially junior and high school granddaughters.
Well, Florence Schwein, thank you so much for being our host, our friend, our confidant, our everything. Thank you so much for being a part of KTEP.
It has been a real pleasure, a joy, and I've enjoyed it so much. And I've enjoyed the listeners out there and the guests on the show and this kind staff. You know, you guys that do the producing, you and Norma that have been my producers, you make it sound good.
We try.
Thank you all.
No, thank you. And thank you for listening to El Paso Primetime.